Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Ron.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now here is your guide to these adventures of mine.
Now, here is OTR Rob.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber and Molly. This episode of Fibber and Molly comes from March 5th, 1946. The episode is entitled Stolen Cars. And we're rounding the corner here on My Favorite Husband. We've got about 4 episodes left, and that's the end of My Favorite Husband. And this My Favorite Husband comes from February 3rd, 1951. The episode is entitled Liz's Inferiority Complex. Believe me, that's a hard word to spell. And then Our Miss Brooks from March 4th, 1951. And it's just simply called The French Teacher. Now, I think we've already been introduced to The French Teacher, so I don't know if that's what this is. But be that as it may. And The Halls of Ivy. And let me try that again. And The Halls of Ivy from March 12th, 1952. The episode is entitled The Lame Girl and the Hypochondriac, another fun word to spell in a spelling bee. And we're rounding the corner also on The Halls of Ivy. I think there's 3 or 4 episodes left and we're done for the entire 2.5 or 3 seasons of The Halls of Ivy. And after that is You Bet Your Life from October 25th, 1950. The episode is entitled The Secret Word is Air. So enjoy all these episodes, and I'll see you all back here next week. Wear a mask. It's not political. Social distance. When you go out, wear a mask. Double masking because of this new virus that's out. This new variant of the virus. You want to double mask when you go out. And I know it's a problem, but we don't have to do it for very much longer if we behave and we listen to the scientists and we do what they say and not what the politicians say. All right. See you back here next week.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, B. Benaderet, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The script is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. The music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Now that the weather's warmer, naturally your doors and windows are apt to be open while you work in the kitchen. That brings up a little cleaning problem, because dirt and dampness do come in to soil your kitchen linoleum. Of course, it isn't a problem if you have Johnson's Glow Coat on your floors. You just whisk away the dirt and moisture with a cloth, and right away your linoleum comes up smiling. That's one of the many nice things about Johnson's Glow Coat. It not only gives linoleum a beautiful polish and makes the colors bright and fresh, it also forms a tough protective wax film that wards off dirt and spilled things. Naturally, this wax protection makes linoleum last longer, too. Johnson's Glow Coat is wonderfully easy to use. There's no rubbing or buffing. You simply apply and let dry. That's all there is to it. Glow Coat shines as it dries, never streaks. In only 20 minutes, your linoleum and other floors are shining beautifully and ready to use. Try it, won't you? Ask for Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat. The McGees of 79 Wistful Vista have worked out an arrangement with the evening paper. Whoever has the energy and ambition to go out and bring it in is entitled to first crack at the news section. So guess who's reading the want ads? As we meet, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Here's an interesting ad, Molly. It says, me too, for sale. Fine saddle horse by farmer who is moving to town with five gates and gentle manner. I'd like to answer that. I've never seen a five-gated farmer. Here's another ad that... Am I disturbing you?
What do you think?
I think I am. Anything in the news section, kiddo?
Well, quite a bit. And before I forget it, you'd better put plenty of water in the car before we go to the drugstore so it'll stay cool.
Stay cool? Why are you worried about the car staying cool?
Well, look at this headline. Police rounding up large numbers of hot cars. My goodness, the way that car of ours...
No. Don't be so naive. That ain't what that means, Molly. A hot car means a stolen car.
Oh.
Now, how come there's been so many jalopy swipes?
Well, too many people leaving their keys in the ignition, according to the police.
Ah, the police, pa. What's the matter with them guys? Sitting around on their big fat precinct stations? Playing pinochle while innocent citizens get their cops cooped. Coops cops. Car stolen. By George, if...
That's not fair, Nominee.
Oh, why ain't it? My gosh, if them lazy mugs would get out and patrol the streets, you know what it would do?
Certainly. It'd make people like you grumble that they ought to stay in their precinct stations and stop hounding innocent citizens.
Well, gee whiz, I...
Come in. Oh, good afternoon, Mayor Latrivia. It's nice to see you.
Thank you, Molly. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Latrivia. You're just the guy I wanted to see. Take a look at this newspaper.
Yeah, pretty crumpled, isn't it? Been sleeping on it?
Never mind what I've been sleeping on. It's what you've been sleeping on that's got this town in a mess.
And what has the mayor been sleeping on, McGee?
The job. That's what the mayor's been sleeping on.
Just what is your current complaint, McGee? Has the garbage collector been waking you up in the morning dropping eggshells?
No. He thinks the police department is falling down on the job with the stolen car situation, Mr. Mayor. Not that I agree with him.
Well, why don't your whistle-blowing, tavern-tummied mob of Keystone cops get busy, Latrivia?
For your information, McGee, if you're capable of assimilating it, our police department has been greatly augmented to cope with the situation.
Augmented my clavicle. Why don't you hire more coppers?
That's what augmented means, sweetheart.
Sure. Huh? Oh, it does?
Yes.
Well... What are you doing about it, Latrivia?
We have started a campaign to get car owners to remove their ignition keys from their cars. We call it the Car Key Club.
Oh, do a lot of people leave their keys in their cars, Mr. Mayor?
More than 60% of the current crop of stolen cars have been taken by youngsters who wanted to go joyriding, Mrs. McGee.
Aw.
And in 9 out of 10 of those cases, the keys left in the ignition were a standing invitation to them.
Well, any sap that's lemon-headed enough to leave his keys in his car deserves to have it stole.
I almost agree with you.
I notice you have your car keys in your hand, Mr. Mayor. You don't take any chances yourself, do you?
These are not my car keys, Mrs. McGee.
Whose are they?
Yours. You left them in your car out in front, here.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. You better be more careful, McGee.
Ah, Patah, nobody'd get very far with my car. There ain't a tire on it that would roll over a cigar butt without blowing a tube.
The loss of your car does not interest me as much as the youngster who starts himself off as a thief by borrowing it, McGee.
Yeah, and you'd really miss that car, too, if you couldn't take it to go on a fishing trip this summer, dearie.
Oh, my goodness, I'm glad you mentioned fishing, Molly. I've got to stop downtown and pick up some fishing tackle I ordered.
Live bait, Your Honor?
No. No, I'm a fly fisherman.
Really, Latrive? I'm a fish fisherman myself.
I didn't mean that I fished for flies, McGee. I fish with flies.
Oh, McGee fishes with Dr. Gamble.
No flies for me, Latrivia. I don't want to be distracted when I fish, and a lot of flies buzzing around.
Never mind. Never mind, McGee. That's a pretty sorry attempt, and I refuse to go along with it this time.
Okay.
Where do you buy your flies, Mr. Mayor? Who catches them for you?
Nobody catches them, Mrs. McGee. I tie most of them myself.
You mean so they won't get away before you need them, huh?
It isn't a matter of their getting away, McGee.
Why, of course not. Not if you tie them up tight.
I don't tie them up. I don't tie them tight, I tie them loose. I mean, I don't tie them up. I just tie them. Didn't you ever hear of a trout fisherman flying ties? Tying flies?
No, and it must be pretty delicate work, too. I tried to lasso a calf once and couldn't come within a mile of it. But to tie a fly... What do? Tie their hind legs together and then throw them down?
No, I don't. I merely take the feathers.
Heavenly days, feathers.
Now, just a darn minute, Latrivia. I and my little wife may be pretty dumb, but feathers on a fly is just...
I didn't say flies had feathers, Father. Feathers. I said a fly trouterman, a fish flyer. When a man flies to try a tie... Tries to fly a try. You know very well that fish flying, try fishing, fish is a flat. McGee.
Yes?
Did I show you the new fly rod I bought for $10?
Yes, and it was a good buy, Latrivia.
Goodbye, McGee.
And here are the King's Men with Bahia.
Them brakes fixed. You said you wanted to stop at Kramer's drugstore, didn't you?
Yes, thank you. Where shall I meet you?
Oh, I'll come in with you. While you're buying your Kleenex, you think. I'll see if I can get Kramer to break a box of paper clips for me. I only need a half a dozen.
Well, you can probably get a dozen now that the steel strike is over, dearie.
Yeah. Well, here's the door of the drugstore, Molly, which we are about to enter for the benefit of those tuning in late. Kramer's drugstore. After you, my dear.
Thank you. Ah, don't you just love the smell of a drugstore, McGee?
Yeah.
Peppermint, licorice, carbolic acid, mayonnaise, tobacco, and wet umbrellas. Got 2 pennies, McGee? I want to weigh myself.
You can weigh yourself for 1 penny.
I always do it twice. I never believe it the first time. Or maybe I'm... Oh, for goodness sake. Hello there, Mrs. Carstairs.
How do you do, my dear? Good afternoon, Miss McGee.
Hi, Carsty. If you're waiting for Kramer to fill a prescription for you, you better sit down, Carsty. Takes him 5 minutes to fill the order and 2 hours to type the label.
Nobody ill at your house, I hope, Millicent.
Oh, no, my dear. I just stopped in to get Mr. Carstairs a bottle of his favorite shampoo.
You mean shampoo, Carsty.
Not the kind he likes, Mr. McGee. He prefers a brand scented with tiger lilies. The formula, I believe, is in the proportion of 12 tigers to 1 lily.
Does your husband wash his own hair, Millicent?
Oh, no, my dear. He sends it out. But he sends his own shampoo with it.
Oh, he wears a skull rug, does he, Carsty?
Yes, Mr. McGee. I think that's one reason I fell in love with him years ago. I simply adored sitting in front of the fireplace, running my fingers through his hair after he'd gone home.
Your hair is getting a little thin in spots, too, isn't it, McGee?
Yeah, but it isn't baldness.
What is it, then, Mr. McGee?
I used to wear a crew haircut, and some of them deserted. Don't you get it, girls? Crew, deserted? The humor of the remark lays...
Yes, doesn't it? Well, I see the clerk has my package ready. Good day.
Good day, Millicent.
Trouble with her is she's got no sense of humor. She's the kind that groans when you make a pun and then uses the same pun the rest of her life.
Making a pun is like laying an egg, McGee.
Yes, isn't it?
You do all the work on it, and then somebody grabs it, and you never see it again.
Well, oh, my gosh, come on, let's get out of here.
But why? My goodness, we
Over there by the cigar counter. It's more troops. I don't want him to see me.
But he's one of your best friends. Why don't...
I'll explain later. Hurry up.
Let's Quit pushing me. McGee, what are you...
Oh, phew, that was a close call. Let's drive around a while, Molly.
McGee, I will not stir one step until you explain why you are avoiding an old friend. That's not like you.
The old friend doesn't like me either.
Why not?
Well, a couple of us boys at the Elks Club saw Mort sleeping in a chair tipped up against the wall, and we stuck a couple of pool cues up his pant leg and then give him a hot foot. Give a scream like a wounded brake drum and caught a glimpse of me ducking through the door.
Well, I always said there's nobody more impractical than a practical joker.
Now Mort wants me to pay for his torn pants, and the Elks want me to replace 2 busted pool cues, and... Oh, my gosh, Molly!
What's the matter? Is he coming?
Our car! It's gone! Somebody stole it! I remember leaving it right here by this fire plug. Somebody stole it!
No! Now calm yourself, dearie. Standing here yelling about it won't help. Get back in the drugstore and call the police.
I'll call the police. Guy can't leave his car for a minute in this town without... Hey, did I take the keys out of it?
No.
Oh.
I did. And I gave them to you, remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, come on and help me telephone the cops.
How can I help you make a phone call?
Well, you can tell me my name when I ask you. I'm so excited I probably won't remember. Oh, come on. Where's the phone booth? Oh, here.
Do you see, madam, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat... I'm sorry, buddy, this phone isn't you. Johnson's Glow Coat not only preserves and protects your linoleum, but it also helps bring back its original beauty and luster.
Yeah, but
requires no rubbing or buffing.
Oh, my gosh. Look, Harlow. Let me use that phone a minute because I got...
Oh, wait, brother. You'll bother me. Get your hand out of that door.
You should know that bothering him in the middle of a sales talk is like slapping a panther in the middle of lunch.
Yeah, but he didn't realize who I was. He thought I was some stranger.
Well, I've heard people say that you'd make a very nice one.
I'll tell him who I am.
And furthermore, madam, Johnson's Glow Coat is extremely simple to use.
Yeah, but
just pour it on, spread it around, and let it dry. And in 20 minutes or less, you can walk across a sparkling, gleaming linoleum...
Hey, Waxy! Let me use the phone, will you? It's me, Little Fibber.
Glad to know you. My name's Wilcox. Now go away, will you? You see, madam, spot-spilled things are so easily removed from a glow-coated floor that housework is greatly simplified. Housewives...
Hey, Waxy, please, listen. I've got...
Look, mister, go send yourself a threatening letter, will you? I'm busy. You see, madam, with Johnson's self-polishing glow coat...
You'll just have to let him finish, McGee. He's the skyrocket type. Won't come down to earth till he burns himself out.
Yeah, but gee whiz, I don't see why he
can... you may have the phone now, sir. I'm very sorry that I was... Oh, hello, pal.
Don't call me pal.
Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Where's the nosy pup that was trying to crash the phone booth?
Well, that was himself here, Mr. Wilcox. He's got to call the police.
Somebody stole my car, Junior. I got to report it.
Oh, gee, that's tough, pal. Hey, look, when you get the police department, ask for my cousin, Big Freddy Wilcox. He's a lieutenant.
Oh.
Here's a handful of nickels.
It'll only cost one nickel, Mr. Wilcox.
Not if you talk to Big Freddy. He doesn't catch on very quick. Usually costs me 35 cents to wish him a Merry Christmas. Well, good luck with it, pal. See you later.
Go on, McGee. Get with it.
Oh, okay. Hello, operator. Give me the police department. Hello, police department. I want to report my car stolen. Yeah, it's a blue sedan with a cracked windshield. A half a Hershey bar in the glove compartment, a bath mat, a lap robe that says Hotel Waldorf onto it, and, wait a minute. What's my name, Molly?
Fibber McGee.
You sure?
Yeah.
Hello? Fibber McGee, 79 Whistle Vista. Yeah. Okay, Sarge. Okay, hop to it. He says they'll put it on the teletype right away, Molly. He says that the... What's the matter?
Look, dearie, when we get out of the car, where were we?
What do you mean, where were we? We were right in front of Kramer's drugstore, naturally.
And which way did we rush out when you saw Mr. Toops?
Out the side door on 14th Street. That was the nearest to... You mean...
I mean, take a look out the front window. There's our car right where we left it, on Oak Street.
Oh, I'll be a monkey's father's brother.
Yeah.
come on, Molly. Imagine that. All that excitement for nothing.
Well, almost for nothing. Cost you a nickel.
I'll pay a nickel any time to have that car, not to have that car stolen. I wouldn't pay any more than a quarter to have...
Well, hello there, kids. What you doing?
Oh, hello, old-timer. We thought somebody'd stolen our car, but we were mistaken.
Hey!
She said we thought our
car... Well, I'm glad you found it, kids. It's a dirty crime to steal anybody's car nowadays. Almost impossible to get a good one.
What are you doing downtown, old-timer?
Hey! Well, Johnny, I come down here to see Doc Gamble. Had a little consultation.
Nothing serious, I hope, old-timer.
Oh, no. You see, kids, when I was in the Seabees, down there in them beautiful, sun-kissed, flowery, man-forsaken South Sea Islands, I took so much atabrine, my system feels like the back room of a drugstore.
Atabrine, huh? That's what they use to cure malaria, isn't it, old-timer?
Hey!
Isn't that what they use to cure...
Yeah, malaria.
What's the treatment, old-timer? What's Dr. Gamble giving you?
The runaround, daughter. He says I'm a silly old fool.
Why?
Simply because I... Hey!
Why does he think you're foolish?
Because I asked him to give me malaria to get rid of the atabrine. Well, I'll find somebody that'll do it. So long, kid.
Well, let's get on home, McGee. This has completely worn me out.
Me too. You got the car keys?
No, you have.
Oh, yeah. Well, in you go, baby.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, you know what, Molly?
What, McGee?
I forgot to call the cops and tell them we'd found the car. Remind me to do that the minute we get home.
It won't be necessary, dearie.
Yeah?
You can tell them right now.
What do you mean?
You hear that?
Oh, what is the car, mister?
What's the matter, officer? Did we go through a stoplight?
No, lady. This car was reported stolen. Your keys, please.
forget it, officer. This is our own car. I thought somebody swiped it, but I...
I realize it's a very amusing situation, mister. But if you don't hand me those car keys, you will acquire a bump that will not be of humor.
Are you perchance threatening my husband?
Your husband? And how did a handsome, intelligent-looking woman like yourself happen to marry a car thief? Why, you look much
don't
too...
Don't call me a car thief, you two-wheeled putt-putting ticket waiver! I'll pull you off that scooter and ram your siren so far down your throat you'll talk with a whine till you're 92.
Get out of that car.
No.
He doesn't trust himself, officer. He has a terrible temper.
I don't trust him either. Now listen, you. Start this car and drive straight to police headquarters. Drive slowly, because I'll be right behind you. And one wrong move will get you a .38 slug right in the upholstery. Now get going.
But, officer, if...
Get.
Got your reading glasses with you, dearie?
No, why?
I think they're going to throw the book at you.
But, officer, for the 900th time, I tell you it's my own car.
He reported it stolen himself, Sergeant.
I'm sorry, but you two people were found driving a stolen car. And you've not identified yourselves to our satisfaction.
Well, call Mayor Latrivia, I tell you. He's a good friend of ours.
We did call him. His secretary says he's out shopping for flies. Whatever that means.
Look now, is there an officer here named Big Freddy Wilcox? He's a cousin of a very good friend of ours, Harlow Wilcox, the Johnson Wax Man.
Big Freddy Wilcox has retired.
Well, wake him up. My gosh, what's a few minutes sleep compared to getting a guy?
He's retired from the police force.
Oh. Did you call any of the other names we gave you?
More Toops.
Mr. Toops said you were a dangerous criminal and hanging was too good for you.
Why, that dirty...
Did you call Dr. Gamble?
Couldn't locate him. We left word for him at his office in the hospital.
Mrs. Carstairs?
We tried Mrs. Carstairs. Her maid said she couldn't be disturbed. She was shampooing her husband's hair.
Oh, now look, officer, be sensible. You can see that
Let
we're
me
not...
talk a minute, madam. Just as soon as you can identify yourselves, you may leave. And we'll all love it. But this stolen car epidemic is serious, and we can't take any chances. If you were a police officer, saw your friends crippled and killed chasing hot cars at 80 miles an hour through traffic, you'd be a lot tougher than I am.
Oh, I don't doubt that, Bud, but...
If you'd seen as many young boys lifted out of wrecked cars they'd stolen for a thrill, you'd want to make leaving car keys in the ignition a criminal offense.
But we didn't leave our keys in the ignition.
You say you reported the car stolen. A high percentage of stolen cars were taken... simply by turning the ignition key.
Doggone it, our car was not stolen. I made a mistake.
Go sit down, both of you. Mm. I've got work to do, and I... Oh, good evening, Doctor.
Hello, Ben. Did you call me?
Oh, McGee, it's Dr. Gamble. Oh, Dr. Gamble, are we ever glad to see you.
Yeah, tell this guy who we are, will you, Doc?
I'm afraid you have the advantage of me, sir. I never saw you before in my life.
Oh, now, Doc, cut it out. This is no time for that stuff. We want to get out of here. Come on. Come on, Arrowsmith. Quit kidding.
This gentleman's name is not Arrowsmith. He's Dr. Gamble.
Oh, that's just a joke, Sergeant. My husband always called him Arrowsmith.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I just call him that all the time.
What are these two people charged with, Sergeant?
They were picked up driving a stolen car, Doctor.
Please, Dr. Gamble,
if you want a professional opinion, Sergeant, from a student of human nature and a fine judge of character, if I do say so myself, I'd say the lady is a high type of woman. However, this man has definite criminal characteristics.
Now, just a darn minute, Patso.
Quiet, you. Go on, Doctor.
Notice the lobes of his ears. Practically non-existent. You'll remember what Lombroso said about that.
Guy or Carmen?
And notice, too, the low brow and the rather loose mouth.
Please, Dr. Gibb, let's not carry this silly joke any further. Heavenly day.
Hey, Doc. Did you hear what we done to more tubes? You mean about the pool cues? Yeah. Yeah, McGee, I did.
Okay, McGee, you win. Turn them loose, Sarge. They're all right.
My goodness, Doctor, you really had me frightened there for a minute.
You vouch for them, do you, Doctor?
He better vouch for us, Buster, or I'll break every pill in his big fat handbag.
Yes, they're all right, Ben. Mrs. McGee is one of the finest women I know.
Oh, Doctor, I'll bet you tell that to all the lady car thieves.
But her husband can stand watching, Sarge. He's the type that tickles coin telephones with pipe cleaners.
So what? I never made a nickel at it.
Well, come on, McGee. Let's go on home. Thank you for coming down, Doctor. Goodbye, Captain.
Good night, Mrs. McGee. Night, Doctor.
So long now.
Oh, my. Doesn't that fresh air smell good? Do all police stations smell like that, Doctor?
Approximately, my dear. They bring in some pretty stale characters there sometimes.
Hey, you going home or back to the hospital, Doc?
The hospital, why?
We'll drop you off on our way home, Doctor, if you'd like a lift.
In what?
In our car, that's it, right over. Hey, where's our car? Molly, ain't this where we left our car? Right in front of the police station?
Why, yes, certainly. Did you take the keys out of it?
Take Molly home, will you, Doc? I'm going back in and give myself up.
Somebody said to me the other day, I have a wonderful slogan for Johnson's Wax. Floor beauty is wax deep. Well, that's a pretty good slogan at that. It's certainly true that even the first application of Johnson's Wax makes almost any floor more beautiful. Even old floors that have dulled with constant use acquire a soft, mellow sheen that highlights your entire home. This shining coat of Johnson's Wax does wonders for your furniture, too. Tabletops look richly polished when you wax them regularly. Chairs and sideboards glow and sparkle. Wax-polished ornaments and picture frames and other things also add immeasurably to the charm of your home. And think how much easier it will be to keep everything clean and bright, because dirt and dust don't readily cling to a smooth waxed surface. And remember that Johnson's Wax protects these lovely surfaces against dirt, wear, and spilled things. Why don't you try protective housekeeping with genuine Johnson's Wax, paste, liquid, or cream?
Say you found the car, McGee?
In the police garage. I remember now, that motor cop took the keys when we got out.
And to think of getting a ticket on the way home for driving too slow.
Yeah. Now, those policemen are really on the job, aren't they? Great bunch of fellas. Honest, dependable, loyal, courageous.
When you do an about face, you really whirl, don't you, dear?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball. It's the Gay Family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. And now let's look in on the Coopers. It's evening and they're entertaining George's boss, Mr. Atterbury, and his wife, Iris. Dinner is over and the group is in the living room.
That was an excellent meal.
Thank you, Iris.
Oh, honey, that's the best dinner we've had in a long time.
Yeah, those oysters. I must have eaten a dozen.
17, but who counts?
17? Aren't you ashamed?
Lotus Bud, I was only doing it for you.
For me?
Certainly. I was trying to find you a pearl.
Oh, sure. As long as you like the oysters, I'm happy.
Say, speaking of oysters, have you heard the latest story that's making the rounds?
No.
What is it? Well, it seems there was a deep sea diver and a mermaid. And one day...
Rudolph!
Yes? Yeah?
Is this a story from mixed company?
Of course not. It seems there was this deep sea and this mermaid.
Rudolph, Iris, this company isn't mixed, it's married.
Well, it doesn't sound like the kind of story he should tell when there are ladies present.
It isn't. It seems... There was a mermaid.
Rudolph!
Very well. I won't tell it.
Oh, darn.
Oh, don't look so unhappy, George. I know a joke to tell.
You do?
Yes, and it's fit for mixed company, too.
Well, tell it anyway.
Well, oh, I'm not very good at telling stories.
You can say that again. Now, just try to get it straight.
Well, you're a big help.
Well, never mind, Liz. Go ahead.
Well, it seems this woman went into a restaurant.
Yeah?
No, wait a minute. It was a man who went into the restaurant. Or was it a woman?
Well, does it make a difference to the story?
No.
It made a difference in my story.
Well, we'll say it was a woman. Now, this woman went into a restaurant.
Yeah?
Or was it a cafeteria?
Oh, honey, get on with the story.
Well, we'll call it a restaurant. This woman went to a restaurant and sat down.
Or did she stand up?
Mr. Atterbury, you're confusing me.
Let her finish, Rudolph.
Thanks. Well, this woman went into the restaurant and sat down and ordered a steak from the waiter. And she said...
Wait a minute, Liz. I know the story you're telling, and it wasn't a steak.
It wasn't? Oh, I know. It was roast beef.
No.
No? And what was it?
Pork chops.
Oh, yes, pork chops. She ordered some pork chops, and,
Well?
Now that I think about it, maybe the story isn't very funny.
Oh. Well, it's a scream so far.
Go ahead, Liz.
Are you sure you want to hear it?
Well, of course we do.
Well, I can't quite remember how it goes.
Oh,
Liz, for heaven's sakes, if you're going to tell the story, tell it.
Oh, I've got it. This woman went into the restaurant and said to the waiter, I'd like 2 pork chops, please. And the waiter said, yes, ma'am. And the woman said, not too much fat either. And the waiter said, yes, ma'am, which way? Well?
Is that all?
Yeah. Pretty funny, huh? Huh? No?
I don't get it.
Oh, you have no sense of humor.
She has, too. You just didn't tell it right. The woman said, I'd like 2 pork chops and make them lean. And the waiter said, yes, ma'am, which way?
Okay.
Either way, it's hardly a belly laugh.
Oh, you're right, George. Make them lean. I forgot that little part.
Little part? The whole point? Oh, Liz, you've never told a joke right since I've known you.
Oh, so you're sorry you married me.
Now, Liz, there's no point in getting your feelings hurt.
No, of course not. I've known worse joke tellers than you.
Well, thanks. Now, Rudolph, you shouldn't have said that.
Thank you, Iris.
After all, Liz can't help it if she's a lousy joke teller.
Oh, now, honey, don't cry. Disgrace not to be able to tell a joke. A lot of people can't. You just have to realize your limitations.
What do you mean?
Well, if you can't do something well, just don't do it, that's all.
Why don't we all play bridge?
Good idea. Capital suggestion.
All right.
Let's switch around tonight. Iris, you be my partner.
All right, George.
Fine, and that means my partner will be... Okay.
Well, all right. We'll flip a coin and see who gets Liz.
Never mind. mind. You three play. I'll go out in the garden and eat worms. George, breakfast is ready.
Good. I'm late for the bank. Oh, gee, I'm hungry.
That's good.
Liz, I've been thinking that we were kind of rough on you last night.
Well, I've been thinking about it too, George. I'm not very bright. I don't do things well.
Oh, don't be silly. You're a wonderful, bright, beautiful, brilliant, scintillating dream girl.
Really? Well, that makes everything all right. Eat your breakfast, honey.
Okay. Say, Liz, you'd better speak to Katie.
What about?
Oh, this breakfast. The orange juice is full of seeds, the eggs are too salty, and the bacon's raw. Now, what are you crying for?
It's Katie's day off. I cooked the breakfast. Well, I've done it again. Chalk up another boo-boo.
I was just kidding, dear. Really, the breakfast is delicious.
No, it isn't. You were right. Look at that glass. You can hardly see the orange juice for the seeds.
But it's better for you that way. Roughage.
Well, what about the salty eggs?
Well, I like them good and salty. You know, that's the trouble with us Americans. We don't get enough salt.
No? Well, the bacon's awful.
No, not at all. I like it raw.
Oh, stop. This proves it, George. I'm a flop. I can't tell jokes. I can't play bridge. I can't cook. I can't do anything.
Oh, now, honey, you can do a lot of things.
Name one.
Well, you're very good at... you're wonderful at... Well, you're really great at... What are you crying for?
I can't think of anything either.
Now, stop talking like that. You're getting an inferiority complex.
Oh, no, I'm not, George.
You're not?
No, I don't need a complex. I really am inferior.
Oh.
Liz, where are you?
I'm here in the bedroom, Iris.
Why are you in bed in the middle of the day?
Why not?
Girl, what's the matter with you?
Iris, you're the first person to come face to face with the thing. What? It suddenly dawned on me. I'm no good. I'm a failure. I can't do anything.
Now, whatever made you think a thing like that?
You told me so last night, and you were right.
Why, we were not. You're a very clever woman. Well, you can do a lot of things.
Such as?
Well, you can... Well, for one thing, you're the best... Well, you've always been tops in,
Those are the same ones George thought of.
Now, wait a minute, girl. I just thought of something you do better than anybody else.
What's that?
There isn't another person in the world who gets their hair the color you do.
Don't have to get nasty about it.
It didn't come out the way I wanted it to.
But look, Liz, why don't you get out of bed and get dressed?
No, I'd probably put my dress on backwards.
Oh, for heaven's sake, you're acting like a moron.
That's so like me, isn't it?
But this isn't getting you anywhere.
Iris, I've been where I'm going.
Liz! Oh, hi, Iris.
Where's yours, boy?
Liz, are you still in bed?
Oh, George.
Oh, I thought we settled this on the phone. I thought you were going to get up.
Well, I was. And then I said to myself, why? And I had me.
Oh, honey, now snap out of it. Come on, give me a kiss.
No, George.
Well, why not?
You wouldn't like it.
Well, look, Liz, you just lie there and rest. Iris and I will leave you alone.
Yeah, well, I'll see you later, Liz.
Okay.
Iris, I'm worried.
Well, I am too, George. I thought she was kidding for a while, but she isn't.
She has the worst inferiority complex I've seen. You know what I think I'll do, Iris?
What?
I think I'll take her to a psychiatrist. Well, that's the story, Dr. Auerbach. She's lost interest and confidence in everything, including herself. Do you think you can snap her out of this?
Oh, yeah, this is nothing. Everybody has an inferiority complex. A little. Mrs. Cooper's is just the large economy size. I will go into my consultation room and see her.
Good. I'll pick her up later on this afternoon.
Fine. Goodbye, Mr. Cooper.
Goodbye.
La, 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 la. Well, now, Mrs. Cooper, we will begin finding out all about you. Lie down on the couch.
Why?
Well, when you go to a psychiatrist, you've got to lie down on the couch.
Why?
Well, because it's... Well, anybody knows that when you... I don't know, that's what they do in the movies.
Whatever you say.
That's a good girl. Lie down. Now, let's commence at the beginning. Tell me all about yourself.
Okay.
Well?
There's nothing to tell. I'm 100% dull.
Oh, now there must be something interesting to tell. What about when you were a child?
I was just as dull, only shorter.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Taller.
You did, too.
Well, everybody does that.
Yeah. What else happened to you? Everybody has something interesting in their background.
They do?
Of course.
Did you?
Well, yes, but...
Tell me about it.
It's really pretty dull.
Oh, nonsense. I'll bet it's exciting. Go on.
Well, I had 3 sisters and 2 brothers.
Mm-hmm. I'll get it, honey.
Hi, Iris. Hi, Mr. Atterbury.
George, boy.
We came right over as soon as we could. What's up?
Well... I want to talk to you before Liz gets downstairs. Come on in the living room.
Very well, boy.
Well, you know I took Liz to the psychiatrist this afternoon.
What'd he say?
She was there almost 2 hours.
What'd he say?
If you want to find out what he said, Lotus Bud, close your big fat petals.
I'm sorry. What'd he say?
Well, I couldn't talk to him at the office because Liz was there. But he just called me a few minutes ago on the phone, and apparently he didn't get very far.
Oh, dear.
He couldn't get Liz to talk. She clammed up.
Liz clammed up?
I know it sounds strange, but you haven't seen her in this new phase of hers.
No, we don't know what it is, Rudolph, but she hardly says a word.
Who cares what it is? Just go stand next to her and see if it's catching.
What do you want us to do, George?
Well, the doctor said it was simply a matter of restoring her confidence. Make her feel clever and witty and talented.
You mean build up her ego.
Exactly. Now, whatever she does tonight, we'll all praise her for it. We'll flatter her. And if she tells a joke, we'll all laugh.
Isn't there some less painful treatment?
do it, Rudolph.
Ooh, the things I do in the name of friendship.
Liz, come on down, honey.
Now, you know what to do. Lay it on thick.
You can leave it to us, George.
Oh, hi, Iris. Hi, Mr.,
Atterbury.
Atterbury.
Yeah. Liz, girl.
Liz, dream girl.
Huh? Oh, I guess you came over to see George. I'll just go back up to my room and sit in the dark.
Oh, nonsense, Liz. How are you feeling?
Oh,
you're beginning to look like your old self.
That's an awful thing to say about anybody. I'd better go up to my room.
Oh, no, wait, girl. We really came over to see you.
You did?
Oh, certainly. We were sitting around after dinner, and I said to Iris, Iris, you know who's the one person I'd like to see right now? And Iris said...
Who?
And I said, Liz. That's who? Liz Cooper. The greatest little person in the whole world.
And what did she say?
What did she say? Oh, that's a killer.
Say, Liz, I didn't see that dress before. That's new, isn't it?
This old rag?
Well, it certainly looks beautiful on you. Oh, it's gorgeous. Iris, why don't you get a dress like that?
Well, I would, Rudolph, but I don't have a figure like Liz's.
Yeah, well, lucky you. What's funny?
You, girl. Why, your figure's stunning. Alongside of you, I look like a
try hippopotamus. Well, let's face it, Iris. Anybody would look like a hippopotamus alongside of Liz.
That's true.
Say, I'd like to dance.
Oh, so would I. How about you, Liz?
Oh, no, thanks. You go ahead and dance with George. Oh,
yeah. Oh, Liz, you're a caution.
What a sense of humor.
Oh, you fractured me.
Me?
Yeah, you're a riot.
Really? Well, I know a joke.
You do? Listen, everybody, Liz is going to tell a joke. A joke.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead, tell us. Oh, we can't wait to hear it.
Well, I'll probably mess it up and forget the punchline.
Well, if you don't want to tell me...
It seems there were these two fellas, Pat and Mike. And they were working together building a house, and every time Pat bent over to pick up something, Mike kicked him. I haven't finished yet.
Oh.
Anyway, Pat finally put some dynamite in his back pocket, and he said the next time Mike kicks me, he's going to blow his foot off. Oh, you liked it, huh?
He's going to blow his foot off. Oh, that's a witty one.
Not too thick, Rudolph.
Well, that was a pretty good story, all right, Liz. Now, shall we all do something?
I know another one.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, honey, tell it.
Well, it seems there was this bashful little worm, and one day he saw another worm, and he fell in love with it, and he said, "Will you marry me?" And the other worm said, "Don't be a fool, I'm your other end." Pretty funny, huh?
It was even funnier than the first one.
Ooh, Liz, you're certainly a great little storyteller, all right.
You really think so, Iris?
Oh, I do, I do. And now let's
I know another one.
seen.
Shall I tell it?
Sure. Go on.
Well, it seems there was a man, and one night he went into the lobby of the hotel where he lived, and he had a horse with him, and the doorman said... Pet shopkeeper said the cat doesn't sing at all. The dog's a ventriloquist. Wake up, everybody. I just told another hilarious story. Hey! Huh? What'd she say?
Oh, sorry. going to blow his foot off. That's right.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the jokes I know.
Oh, what a pity, and it's only 2:30 in the morning.
Well, I could maybe think of more if I tried.
Oh, no, I know. I mean, I can't laugh anymore, Liz. I've got a stitch in my side as it is. Ooh.
Well, I guess I am kind of a funny storyteller, huh?
Oh, the greatest.
Now, you still want to dance with me, George?
Absolutely.
How about you, Mr. Atterbury? The next time we play bridge, can I be your partner?
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Okay, everybody, that's enough.
Yeah?
What do you mean, that's enough?
I mean you can stop flattering me and building up my ego.
Liz, you knew what we were doing all the time.
I was listening on the extension when George talked to the psychiatrist.
Well, for heaven's sakes, if you knew what we were doing, why did you let us go on all evening there like this?
Because this is the first time in my life I ever got to be the center of attention for the whole evening, and I liked it.
Husband has been presented to the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, when you're living and working away from home, a good friend and confidant comes in mighty handy. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is fortunate in having just such a friend and her landlady. Last Friday at breakfast, Miss Brooks confided in Mrs. Davis about her Thursday date.
I was out with Mr. Boynton last night, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, you don't have to tell me that, Connie. I could tell when I went in to wake you up this morning.
How?
You were squeezing your pillow so hard, half the feathers popped out.
Oh. No wonder I dreamt that I was captured by Indians. We had quite an exciting time, though, before Mr. Boynton took me home.
What did you do?
Well, he said he'd like to go to a movie, so I very subtly steered him to the Strand, where they're showing Valentino.
Oh, is that the one about Rudolph Valentino, the great lover?
It isn't about Jake LaMotta. It's really a very good movie, and I was hoping Mr. Boynton would take a slight hint and get into the mood.
Did the scheme work, Connie?
Did it work? Why, halfway through the most torrid love scene, two ushers had to ask Mr. Boynton to leave.
Oh, really, Connie? What did he do?
He giggled so hard he dropped his popcorn.
Don't worry, Connie. You may find romance sooner than you think. That is, if you take advantage of the article I read in this morning's paper.
What article?
It says that Mr. Jacques Bouvet of the French public school system is here in America to import teachers to France. He arrived at Madison yesterday, and he's interested in any American instructors who can help streamline French educational methods.
Well, good for him. But why an American teacher should go traipsing off to France to teach is beyond me.
But Mr. Beauvais says that as an incentive, the salary would be just double your present one.
Well, don't stand there. Pack my bag. Double my salary? And I presume they'd pay all traveling expenses.
Definitely.
Well, then all I have to do is to sell myself to Monsieur Beauvais. Where is he staying while he's in town, Mrs. Davis?
At the Empire Hotel.
Does the article say how long a teacher would be expected to stay in France?
At least 1 year, Connie.
Oh, then I'd better forget about it. It isn't just Mr. Boynton I'd miss. I'd be lonesome for you, Mrs. Davis, and Harriet and Walter Denton and all the swell kids at school.
I know, Connie. Then there's your principal, Mr. Conklin.
Well, don't stand there. Pack my bag.
Look, Connie, even though we'd all miss you, too, I'd like to remind you of the old saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder. If you do go away for a year, think of what your reunion will be like.
Yes, I can picture it now. I trip lightly down the gangplank, and there on the dock stands Mr. Boynton. As our eyes meet, the scene is charged with romance. And when he speaks, it takes a long moment before his passionate words penetrate my consciousness.
What passionate words, Connie?
Long time no see, Miss Brooks.
What have you done to your car, Walter? It looks different this morning. Prettier.
That's because you're in it, lovely one. I purposely picked you up early this morning so you could take advantage of the bulletin I have for you.
Bulletin?
Yes, ma'am. I read an article in the paper that says a high official in the French public school system is in town, looking for teachers. A Mr. Jacques Beauvais.
That's Jacques Beauvais, Walter.
How do you know him, Miss Brooks?
Mrs. Davis introduced me to the article this morning.
Oh, aren't you excited? He's offering teachers an all-expense trip to Gay Paris. That's short for France.
I know he is. That's why I've got to get to Mr. Conklin's office.
Why Mr. Conklin's office?
So I can get permission to take a little time off this morning. I'd like to see Mr. Beauvais before he's mobbed by the other teachers.
But, Miss Brooks, you know how old Marblehead Mr. Conklin is when it comes to giving people time off.
Well, I'll just have to think of some legitimate-sounding alibi, I guess. Now, let's see. What sounds like a truthful tissue of lies?
You should never have brought this paper to my office, Harriet. The article about that Frenchman, Beauvais, raiding our schools for teachers has upset me terribly.
But why, Daddy?
Because I know school teachers, that's why. His offer of traveling expenses and more money will have them flocking to his wallet like moths to a flame. They'll follow him to France like those dim-witted children who followed the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
But, Daddy, Monsieur Beauvais is not only looking for teachers. It says in the last paragraph that he's also offering high school principals double salary and all traveling expenses.
Ah, Paris in the spring. The Champs-Élysées, burgeoning blossoms in the Bois de Boulogne. Hand me that paper, please.
Here you are.
It says Monsieur Jacques Beauvais, who is staying at the Empire Hotel. And it's been further details in a later edition. Run down to the newsstand and fetch me the latest one, Harriet.
But, Daddy, you wouldn't let anything tempt you into leaving Madison, would you?
Calm yourself, my dear. I have no thought of succumbing to the siren song of filthy lucre. Moreover, I intend to see to it that there is no exodus from my staff. If I catch any member of Madison's faculty making a beeline for the Empire Hotel, I'll see that... Come in. Now, you run along, fetch that paper, Harriet.
All right, Daddy. Hi, Miss Brooks.
Hi, Harriet.
Bye, Miss Brooks.
Bye, Harriet.
And what brings you to my office so early, Miss Brooks?
An emergency, Mr. Conklin. I've got to make a beeline for the Empire Hotel.
Oh, you do. And do you mind telling me why before you buzz off?
Well, I've just got to get over there, sir. You see, I...
Let me help you. Perhaps someone close to you, some relative of whom you're exceedingly fond, lies ill in the Empire Hotel.
Ill? Why, yes, sir, that's exactly it. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, don't worry about that. I'll shove them back in a minute. That is, just which one of your relatives is it?
It's my grandmother, Mr. Conklin. She's terribly ill.
Poor dear soul. Perhaps she'd feel better if you informed her of a rather startling fact. Namely, the Empire Hotel is a recently erected annex of the Empire Athletic Club, and it's strictly for men.
So is Grandma. She's very popular. You see, sir, she works at the Empire Hotel. She's a telephone operator there. And yesterday she had a terrible accident.
An accident?
Yes, sir. It seems one of the other girls didn't show up, and Granny had to stay at the switchboard all during her lunch hour. Well, finally, the manager brought her a plate of spaghetti.
Spaghetti, Miss Brooks?
Well, sir, between her being so hungry and the switchboard being so busy, Granny got all excited and ate up 3 long-distance calls.
What a catastrophe. But, Miss Brooks, I have a suggestion to make. Supposing I accompany you to the Empire Hotel, it'll be a nice surprise for your grandmother.
Oh, but, Mr. Conklin,
I'll just burst into her room and say, Grandma, what a big mustache you have.
What?
And, Grandma, what a big fat bankroll to be offering double salaries to teachers to lure them out of the country. And, Granny dear, why on earth are you registered here as Jacques Bouvet? Well, Miss Brooks, is the jig up or isn't the jig up?
Charleston, Charleston.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. Yes, the Colgate way is the most thoroughly proved and accepted home method of oral hygiene known today. Over 2 years' research showed brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate Dental Cream helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. The Colgate way stops tooth decay best. No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, offers such conclusive proof. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, I didn't dare leave school during the morning session, but at lunchtime I joined Mr. Boynton in the cafeteria and told him all about Monsieur Bouvet. When he heard that I was contemplating a trip abroad, Mr. Boynton was grief-stricken. And with ill-concealed panic, he finally managed to say,
"You're in France would do you a world of good."
Yes, I guess it would. But, Mr. Boynton, a year is a long time. I sort of expected you to say you'd miss me.
Oh, that goes without saying. I often think of how much we've meant to each other, and, well, you might not believe this, Miss Brooks, but in the 4 or 5 years we've known each other...
4 years, 7 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Well, yes. Well, in all that time, I've never once... That is, well, I...
Yes, Mr. Boynton, you never once what?
You're the only girl I've ever taken to the zoo.
You've no idea what a feeling of security that gives me.
It may not seem like a very romantic locale, but many's the time as we stood outside those cages, I got some pretty bold thoughts.
You wished you were inside? Oh, we have had some good times, Mr. Boynton, and if I do go abroad, I'll miss you more than just a little.
That goes both ways. But there's a silver lining in every cloud, you know. Remember, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And when you returned, I'd be the first one to meet you at the boat. Yes, ma'am, I'd be right there on that dock as you tripped down the gangplank.
And what would you say, Mr. Barton?
Say? Well, I don't know offhand, but it wouldn't be anything teary or sentimental. No, I'd probably just take your hand and get off some witty remark or other.
Like what?
Well, like, long time no see.
Oh, that is a wham-doodle of a crack. But perhaps we'd better drop the subject, Mr. Boynton. After all, my going to France is purely conjectural. Monsieur Bouvet may not even pay any attention to the message I left for him.
Message?
Yes, since women are barred from the Empire Hotel, I phoned and left my name and address at the desk. Mr. Bouvet was out, so I just left word that if he wanted a good English teacher for overseas duty, he could interview me at my place this evening.
Well, everything happens for the best, I suppose. Still, this Bouvet has a lot of nerve to expect American teachers to go traipsing off to France to teach.
He's offering all travel expenses and double salary.
I wonder if he'd be interested in a biology teacher. You know, it might be quite a rewarding experience at that, to teach abroad for a while.
Pardon me, Mr. Boynton, but I've got an important message for Miss Brooks.
Well, go right ahead, Walter.
Harriet just took a call for you in the principal's office, Miss Brooks.
Oh, who was it?
Mrs. Davis. She called to say that Monsieur Bouvet phoned, and he said he'd be over at your house at 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, that's wonderful, Walter.
Wait. In the late edition of the paper, it says that he's only accepting teachers who have a first-hand knowledge of France and its people, and who speak the language fluently.
Fluently? But I haven't spoken any French since high school, and I majored in Spanish at college.
I've forgotten most of the French I ever learned also. I guess we're in the same boat, Miss Brooks.
Well, start paddling, Mr. Boynton. We're up the same creek, too. Well, it's almost 8 o'clock, Mrs. Davis. Monsieur Bouvet should be here any minute.
But, Connie, you said yourself you don't know enough about French to read a perfume bottle. How do you expect to land a job teaching over there?
If I get the job, Mrs. Davis, I'll have time to take a refresher course before I commence teaching. Now, don't worry about me. I'll get by this interview somehow.
If it's what you want, Connie, I can only wish you luck. I'll go make some tea now. If you need me for anything, just call.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Uh-oh, that's him. Coming!
Bonsoir. I am Jacques Bouvet.
Oh, yes. I mean, oui. Entrez, monsieur.
Merci. You, I presume, are la belle Brooks.
I'm not anybody else, la but. let me take your coat and beanie. A beret. I'll hang them right here, Monsieur Bouvet. Now, if you'll follow me into the living room. Now, shall we sit over here on the sofa?
Bon. Now, tell me, if you will, something about your background. You are acquainted with Paris?
Paris? I always think of it as my second home.
Oh, you've been there.
I've never really left there, mentally. Oh, the boulevards, the cafes.
If you are so much of a Parisian at heart, I would wager that most of all you miss the Bois de Boulogne.
I cry when I think of it. That woman made me the best hats I ever owned.
Hats? But the Bois de Boulogne is a city park.
Well, that's what I like about Paris. A park can have the same name as a milliner. could I get you something, Monsieur Bouvet? Tea will be ready very soon, or would you rather have coffee?
Oh, nothing now, thanks. I'd just like to get, how you say, acquainted. But why should I struggle so with the English? You have the French, no?
I have a little, yes.
Ah, bon. Dites-moi alors, cette photographie-là, sur la table, c'est votre père?
Oh, oui.
Et l'autre photographie, c'est votre mari?
Oui.
Oh, je suis très content.
Oui.
Pardonnez-moi, Connie. The tea is ready.
What? Oh, Mrs. Davis, this is Monsieur Bouvet.
Oh, merci, monsieur. I'll put the tea sur le table. Now, if you'll excuse moi, I'd like to speak with Miss Brooks privately for one moment. Come here, Connie.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Excusez-moi, too, Monsieur Bouvet.
Certainement.
What is it, Mrs. Davis?
It's evident that I remember more of my high school French than you do. You made a terrible mistake.
What did I do?
When Mr. Bouvet pointed to that picture of Mr. Conklin, he asked you if he was your father, and you said yes.
Oh, no.
Then when he pointed to Mr. Boynton's picture and asked if he was your husband, you said yes again.
Mr. Boynton? My husband? What am I laughing at? Either of us.
You've got to go back and tell Mr. Bouvet the truth.
What? And let him know I don't understand French? I'm sorry, Mrs. Davis, but I've got to bluff this thing through until I land that job.
As you wish, Connie, but I'm going into my room and lie down. This operation is too nerve-wracking for me.
I'll let you know how I come out, Mrs. Davis. Oh, you're looking at my photographs, monsieur.
Oui, madame, but perhaps I should talk the English. It will help me in my interviews with other Americans, n'est-ce pas?
Oh, pa, pa.
Your husband is very charming, but one thing I do not understand. Why you call yourself Miss Brooks when he signs this picture, Monsieur Boynton?
Well, here in America, we girls who teach school are allowed to use our maiden names. But I do hope you'll have the opportunity to meet Mr. Boynton. He's a charming person. So devoted, so thoughtful, and so affectionate. So, come in. It's not locked. Entree.
Good evening, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Boynton.
I hope you don't mind my... Oh, you have company.
Monsieur Boynton, allow me to congratulate you. You have a very charming wife.
I have? Where?
Oh! Dear me, isn't he a scream? Sense of humor, darling.
Your husband is funny.
Funniest thing since murders in the Rue Morgue. Give me your hat, dear. I'll explain later, Mr. Boynton. Just smile.
All right.
You are a man after my own heart, Mr. Boynton. Devil may care. And your wife has told me how affectionate you are.
Affectionate?
Well, don't just stand there. Kiss me, you fool.
Please, Miss Brooks, please.
Listen to him beg. Well, I'm all puckered, dearest. Let's have it.
Oh, how romantic. But permit me to make the introduction. I am Monsieur Jacques Bouvet.
Monsieur Bouvet, but of course... Je suis très joyeuse. Bonsoir, mon ami.
How do you like that? I pucker and he kisses him.
Monsieur Bouvet, I've always wanted to teach biology in Gay Paris. You alone can make my fondest dream come true.
Well, frankly, I have several biology teachers already contracted. Somehow Paris seems to lend itself to biology.
And vice versa.
But of course, if I accept your wife, it would be a shame to separate you, especially if you are really so madly in love with her.
In love with her? Rather would I lose my life and my wife.
Comment?
Miss Brooks.
Oui?
Fuck her up again, mon chéri.
Why, Pierre Boynton. Here I am.
Oh, wait. There will be time for that later.
Marshall plan or no Marshall plan? This guy has got to go.
What is it you want to tell us, monsieur?
Well, I have come to the conclusion that married couples are best for my purpose. Single teachers might get lonesome after a short while, and then, poof, back to America they come, leaving me clutching a valise.
Clutching a valise?
Holding the bag. Well, Monsieur Bouvet, you won't have have to worry about that with us. We'll stay the full time.
Oh, but of course it is only fair to tell you I have interviewed other couples, some married 10, 11 years, and with big families. The priority will go, of course, to those who are married the longest time.
Oh, we've been married a very long time.
How long?
Real long.
Real, real long.
The door was open, so I just... Oh, I didn't know you had guests, Miss Brooks.
Oh, that's all right, Walter.
Yes, come on in, Walter.
Monsieur Bouvet, I'd like to present our youngest son, Walter.
What?
Isn't he a doll? Now go out into the kitchen and feed your fat little face.
Miss Brooks!
You heard your mother, son. We're discussing business with Monsieur Bouvet.
Oh, you're Monsieur Bouvet.
Oui, oui.
Oh, bonsoir, monsieur. Comme entendez-vous, say swore.
Translation. Goodbye, Mr. Bouvet. I've got to feed my fat little face.
You are quite a family.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Just stop by to... Oh, you have company, Miss Brooks.
The more the merrier. Do come in.
I recognize you from your photograph, monsieur. You are Papa.
Papa?
And you have a lovely daughter, monsieur. Such a sweet face. Just gaze upon her.
Gaze upon her? My daughter's at home.
But of course she's at home. I have been talking with her for the last 10 minutes.
Sir, either you have an extremely loud voice, or you're as wacky as a dodo bird.
Qu'est-ce que c'est dodo bird?
Oh, it's just a colloquialism, sir. Dad here is a great little kidder.
Want some tea, Daddy dear?
Daddy dear?
I'll get it for you if you want me to, Grandpa.
What's going on here?
I was just going to escort Monsieur Bouvet to the door.
Monsieur Bouvet?
Oh, I should have known. Bonsoir, mon ami. Je suis très joyeuse.
Well, there's no use talking. I've got to get myself a tuxedo.
Monsieur Bouvet, I'll come right to the point. At first, I refuse to be tempted, but as one of the nation's more efficient high school principals, I feel I owe it to your country to volunteer my services until your educational system is once again flourishing.
That is a most kind, monsieur.
Of course, I'll be frank with you, sir. I'm also interested in the fact that you're offering double salary.
Oh, that? Oh, I'm afraid, monsieur, the American press has made a slight, misquoting.
What did they misquoting?
Well, you see, we are offering double your present salary, but it is not in dollars. It is in francs.
In francs? That's much less than we're receiving now.
Oh, Wilbur, think of the experience. Now, if you will all want to sign up, I will get the paper.
Just a moment, Monsieur Bouvet. I'd like to hold a little caucus with Papa and Pierre and Sonny. Gather around, friends.
What'll we tell them, Miss Brooks?
Well, I think we ought to say something like this.
Yes, that sounds just right to me.
And between us, we ought to know enough French to give him the whole thing in his native tongue. Let's see. The first word is fichier.
And the next is le.
Then comes camp.
Fine. Monsieur Bouvet.
Oui?
Fichez le camp.
Comment?
Translation.
Hit the road!
Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment. Now, the case of the close scrape featuring Charles Nielsen, department store buyer. Here's what Mr. Nielsen told us. Listen. Here's exactly what happened. Shaving was just one close scrape after another for me, and then I discovered Palmolive Lather Shave Cream and a new, different way to shave. Palmolive's oceans of rich, thick lather ended my worries about scrapes, burns, and nicks. Why, even in cold or hard water, that Palmolive Lather Way is super smooth, super comfortable. Take Charles Nielsen's advice, men. The new Palmolive Lather Way gets beards really soft, and it provides a protective film that actually floats your razor's cutting edge. You get a clean, close shave every time without worry about scraping or nicking, even in cold or hard water.
Charles Nielsen and 1,200 other men tested Palmolive Lather Cream following package directions, and 3 out of 4 reported smoother, more comfortable shaves the Palmolive Shave Cream way, no matter how they shaved before. Better get Palmolive Lather Shave Cream. Remember, even in cold or hard water, the Palmolive Lather way means smoother, more comfortable shaves. Now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, after Monsieur Bouvet left, Mr. Conklin and Walter said goodnight, and that left just Mr. Boynton and me.
Well, I guess we won't be going to Paris this year, but maybe we'll get another chance. You know, Miss Brooks, I've often dreamt of being in Gay Paris with you.
You have, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, yes, indeed. And if we were there, I'd take you to the most romantic spot on the continent. La Maison des Animaux.
What is that, Mr. Boynton?
It's one of the biggest zoos in the world.
Mr. Boynton, take a letter. Dear Lafayette, not only are we not there, but we ain't coming.
Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Palmolive Shave Cream for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis and Joe Quillen, with the music of Wilbur Hatch.
Listen to this. With Marvelous Vel, V-E-L, you can save 90% of dishwashing work.
A quick soak in Vel suds gets dishes and glassware shiny clean. Even if a bit of food should cling, a touch with a dishcloth gets rid of it fast.
Yes, Vel's activated suds lift off and carry away food and grease. So all dishes need is a quick rinse, and they dry sparkling without washing or wiping.
All pots and pans need is a soaking with Vel suds. Then you can wash them shiny clean without hard scouring.
What's more, Vel is a miracle of mildness. So get new Vel. Save 90% of dishwashing work.
If you like mysteries that are as full of chuckles as chills, be sure to listen to Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of the Halls of Ivy. This Halls of Ivy comes from March 12th, 1952. The episode is entitled The Lame Girl and the Hypochondriac. And this episode really sounds like it's comical, but it's very touching. And it proves that how a little girl who wears braces, how she can make someone else seem small compared to what she has endured. So it's a very good episode, and I highly recommend. I hope you'll listen to it. Anyway, enjoy this Halls of Ivy.
Milwaukee Famous presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College as the guest of our sponsors, the Brewers of Schlitz Beer. Tonight's program is dedicated to Dr. Horace Mann Bond, president of Lincoln University, Chester County, Pennsylvania.
The taste of Schlitz, the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. If you like good beer, do as millions of people are doing all over the nation. Ask for Schlitz, the most popular beer in history. And now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA.
When one thinks of a college president, it's apt to be in terms of mortarboard, academic gown, and a portentous, harried individual poring over lists of wealthy alumni for some untapped vein of golden endowments. This is a caricature, of course, but caricatures are merely distorted portraits. Without the distortion, at least one college president, William Todhunter Hall of Ivy, is a man in a business suit who's neither portentous nor harried, and he has friends and neighbors like everybody else. One of them is waiting for him now in his study at number one faculty row. And as he enters the front door, his wife, Victoria, says...
Oh, Toddy, I'm so glad you're home.
Thank you, darling. Your happiness at my return is most reassuring. I'd dislike it very much if you met me at the door and said, oh, dear, you again. Back already?
Well, I'm not only glad because I'm always glad to see you again, but also because we have a visitor.
Oh? Anyone who is likely to tax the presidential patience with some campus caper?
No, no. This is someone you always enjoy talking to. It's little Sheila Quincannon.
Oh, Sheila. That's fine. Where is she?
Well, she's in your study, sitting in your chair and at your desk, drawing pictures on your best stationery with your best fountain pen.
Well, my best stationery and my best fountain pen are none too good for Sheila Quincannon.
Yeah, I know, Toddy. And when you start visiting, whether you'll be ours, so first tell me, how was the board meeting?
Oh, much as usual. It's getting so the other members consider themselves a gallery of happy spectators when Mr. Wellman and I get into our customary verbal head-on collisions.
Well, Mr. Wellman has an unfair advantage in a head-on collision. He has two heads.
Well, if he had seven heads, they'd do him no good against me. I've discovered a technique which has him completely baffled. It's a conversational gambit which I should hesitate to use against anyone else, but with Clarence, all's fair in love and board meetings.
What's the gambit?
Silence.
How do you use it?
Well, when he finishes speaking for a moment, I simply smile politely and wait as though for him to continue. Mm. When the pause becomes unbearable, he turns red, starts talking again, and makes no sense whatsoever because he is babbling from pure embarrassment.
Yeah. That reminds me of that book by Stephen Potter called Gamesmanship.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Or How to Win Games Without Actually Cheating. You should write one on shut-upmanship, or How to Win an Argument Without Opening the Mouth.
Yes, it's peculiar how deafening a sudden silence can be.
Yeah, that awful conversational laundry chute down which the whole party goes.
Yes. Well, it accounts for a great deal of brainless chatter. Oh, which reminds me, I must go and see my guest, whose chatter makes more sense than that of most people.
Yeah.
Come along, Vicky.
You won't be embarrassed if I'm present when you talk to this other woman.
Oh, not at all, darling. I love you both.
Oh, well, good. Yes. Sheila, dear, our man has come home.
Hello, Sheila.
Hi, Dr. Hall. Hi, Mrs. Hall. Look at the picture I drew.
Now, why, that's simply wonderful, Sheila.
Yes.
Isn't it, William?
I've never seen anything quite like it. Personally, I never could draw horses.
Me either. That's like a picture of a dog.
Oh, yes, yes, a dog.
Yes, it's a nice high dog.
Especially in front. Are you going to be an artist when you grow up, Sheila?
No, I'm going to be a doctor, or maybe a nurse. Mm. I think doctors and nurses are wonderful.
Well, you ought to know, dear. You've seen enough of them.
I'm with them, I bet. I guess maybe that's why I like you so much, Dr. Hall. You're a doctor, too.
Well, not a medical doctor. I'm really just plain Mr. Hall, but people always call me doctor, and I'm so used to it, I don't bother to correct them anymore. How are all your family?
Oh, fine, thank you. Except Terry. He went to the hospital yesterday.
Oh, heavens, really? I didn't know. Is it anything serious, Sheila?
Oh, no. He's just having his appendix out.
Oh, I'm sorry. But, you know, they can remove an appendix very easily these days. He'll be up and about before you know it. How old is Terry now?
He's 10, going on 12.
10 going on 12? What happened to 11?
Well, my daddy says he's growing so fast, he'll probably skip 11. Hey, Dr. Hall, your fountain pen doesn't work very good anymore. The point got all spread out. See?
Yes, I see. Yes, it'll be twice as good as it was before. Now it has 2 points.
I was kind of afraid for a while I'd busted it.
Well, that pen wasn't really for writing with anyway, Sheila. It mostly ever just to look at.
Well, I didn't even know it had ink in it.
Oh, it had lots of ink in it. Too much, even. Some of it came out on the carpet. I tried to wipe it up, but it got kind of smeared around more. Gee, I'm sorry, Mrs. Hall.
Well, don't be, dear. That carpet needed cleaning anyway, and you just helped to bring it to mind. Oh, thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome, Mrs. Hall.
Well, now, how about some more cookies and another glass of milk?
No, thank you. I had two glasses and about a zillion cookies, and I don't want to spoil my dinner. I guess I'd better go home now.
And come back soon, won't you, Sheila? I like talking to you. By the way, when did you say your brother was being operated on?
This afternoon. Mother says we can go see him about Saturday. I gotta go to the hospital anyway and get my braces adjusted.
Well, I'd love to go with you, if I may. Terence was teaching me how to make a kite, and I'm just about ready for my second lesson.
And tell your father from me, Sheila, that I want to...
There's the phone, Dr. Hall.
Yeah, we know, dear, but where is it?
Well, it's on a long cord, Sheila, and sometimes we can't find it. Maybe...
Oh, I remember now. I put it in the desk drawer so I'd have more room. Here it is.
it's a very good idea. I'm sorry I never thought of that myself. Excuse me, ladies.
Certainly.
Sure.
Dr. Hall's residence. Professor Harmon. Oh, yes, Professor. How have you been? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Oh, but isn't there anything we can do to lighten your schedule? I see. Well, it's only that I dislike your taking such a drastic step without exhausting every possibility. Why don't you come over and have a talk? Perhaps we can work out something. 4:30, that'll be fine. Goodbye, Professor. Now then, Sheila. Sheila, will you let us know when you hear how Terence is getting along?
Okay, Dr. Hall. They said he ought to be out from the
anesthetic?
Sure. Right now, maybe.
Sheila, if it's not asking too much, could you come back and tell us about him?
Oh, yes, I'd like to.
Say about 4:30?
I come over a lot oftener, but Daddy says you're a busy man and don't bother you.
Yeah, it only bothers us when you stay away too long, Sheila.
Oh, I like to come over here. You're always so nice. Even when I make a mistake, it turns out good. Like when I spilled ink on your carpet, and it reminded you to have it cleaned anyway. Well, goodbye, Dr. Hall. Will you please hand me my crutches?
Here you are, Sheila. I'd offer to help you, but you always refuse me. And my feelings are so easily hurt.
You just say that, I guess. Anyway, I like to walk by myself. And I almost never fall down anymore. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, it really is, Sheila. You know, you're getting to be the bounciest one on the block.
Thank you, Mrs. Owl. I only go next door, but it takes me a little while to get there. So I better get started, I guess. Bye, Dr. Hall.
Goodbye, Sheila. Until 4:30. And thank you for fixing my fountain pen.
Yeah, and for reminding me about the carpet.
Oh, well, that's all right. I was glad to do it.
She's really a terrific youngster, isn't she? Miss Galahad, pinafore.
It isn't the iron in her braces that keep her going, it's the steel in her courage. It reminds me of one definition of the word handicap. An artificial disadvantage placed on a superior contender.
But why did you ask her to come back? I mean, so specifically at 4:30.
Oh, it's just an idea I had after talking to Professor Harmon. He wants to resign.
Resign? Hmm. Why? I thought he was one of the best men on the faculty.
Oh, he is. But it seems he can do more for the students than he can for himself.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's a person who makes 10 trips a day to the drugstore for pink pills.
Pilgrim?
No. You know, hypochondriac.
Hypochondriac, yes. According to the old definition, one who enjoys ill health.
But I still don't see what he's got to do with little Sheila's coming back at 4:30.
Well, I'm not sure I do either. But you know how I like to set up personal situations and see what happens? I'm afraid I'm just a drawing room dramatist who is lucky to have a heroine like Sheila Quincannon.
You wouldn't believe
what a guy could get into buying a 3-cent stamp. Unless, of course, you knew Dal Warburton, our one-of-a-kind postmaster here at Ivy. I dropped into the post office quite innocently.
Well, well, Carpenter. Can I sell you something, or did you just drop in to model for one of our wanted posters?
Oh, hello, Dal. Oh, I just want a 3-cent stamp.
3-cent stamp, eh? Yeah, well, let me see now. We've got several varieties. Got portraits, landscapes, great men, several delightful issues commemorating great events.
Look, Dal, I just want a 3-cent stamp. I'm not fussy about what it looks like.
Dear, dear, he isn't fussy. Ken, I'm surprised at you. Where's your sense of proportion? Now, what if I went into a tavern and asked for a glass of beer, and the man says, what kind? And I says, oh, I'm not fussy.
But, Dal, that's different. You know, I talk about Schlitz beer. You know, I believe it's the greatest beer in the world. And you know perfectly well that Schlitz is America's best liked beer. And yet you wouldn't really say you weren't fussy, would you, Dal?
No, I don't know, Ken. I might. You see, I'm a little hurt. Now, you interrupted me before I'd finished my sales story on the line of stamps we carry here.
Dal, you can't be serious. A 3-cent stamp, that's all I wanted. A measly little 3-cent stamp.
Well, I'll thank you not to run down my product.
Oh,
my. Now, you listen here. We put out stamps here that can't be matched any place in Ivy for the money. Now, you tell me that Schlitz can't be matched for taste. What if I were to
but
say
Dal,
that...
But, Dal, Schlitz can't be matched. Schlitz has a wonderful, light, bright taste you just don't find in any other beer. A taste so great that millions of Americans have made Schlitz beer their own personal beer. You see, Dal, the big difference between your product and mine is that mine can't be licked.
Now, Ken, I've been patient about listening to your pitch. Now, may I finish mine?
Oh, all right, Dal, go ahead.
Well, I was merely going to say, Ken, that for 3 cents, I'd sell you the best 3-cent stamp in the house, close the stamp window, since it's almost 6 anyway, and then...
Yes, Dal, and then?
And then, Ken, I'd share with you a pair of bottles of the beer you love, Schlitz beer. It's my favorite, too. Shall we?
Dal, we shall and will. Special delivery. Return to the halls of Ivy, we find Dr. and Mrs. Hall entertaining another visitor, Mr. Merriweather, member of the Board of Governors and a good friend. Mrs. Hall is saying...
Now, please take off your coat and that glorious red scarf and sit down a while, Mr. Merriweather. It's a cold afternoon and we don't want our favorite board member catching pneumonia.
Thanks, ma'am. I appreciate your solicitude, as I appreciate you in all other departments.
Dear boy.
I was just walking around the campus... happy in being an overage graduate who can sleep until noon, and thought I'd drop in and see Prexy and his dream girl.
Prexy and his dream girl don't see you often enough, Charles. Do we, dream girl?
No, Prexy, we don't. Have you been busy, Mr. Merriweather?
No, ma'am, I have not. I am that pathetic figure in American life, the retired businessman, who has no amusing vices, no talent for pure loafing, and who lives for golf in a climate where you can only play it 7 months in the year. Which makes my business engagement this afternoon very urgent.
Oh, are you starting on a new enterprise, Charles?
Yes, yes. There's a new miniature golf course on the 5th floor of the Keeler building downtown. It's rumored to be tougher than Pebble Beach, and strong men are said to have come down in the elevator weeping.
This sounds perfectly fascinating, and there's no danger of sunstroke either.
Well, let me know how you like it, won't you? Vicky and I may have a go at it ourselves.
Ah, I'll give you a report. My tipsters tell me that on the 7th hole, you tee off from the top of an empty bottle.
Oh, no!
Yes, if you knock the bottle down, extra stroke. Then you have to shoot through the thumb of a catcher's mitt, carom the ball off the trigger of a music box which plays, "I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you." And drive past 3 hazards.
What are they?
A pool of glue, a hole in the floor that connects with the city sewer system, and a Labrador retriever on a long leash who gets a hamburger for every golf ball he can grab. My informant may have exaggerated slightly, but it's bound to be more fun than sitting in my broker's office trying to find a bum stock for a tax loss.
Yes. Tell me, is there a 19th hole on this course, Mr. Merriweather?
Ma'am, you have the instincts of a true golfer. That was my first question, too. Yes, there is. Just a mashy shot up the street.
Don't let us detain you from this investigation, Charles. If you don't come back, we'll assume that you were mistaken for an extra-large hamburger by the Labrador Retriever.
Well, just remember me as kindly old Charlie Merriweather and have Slammin' Sammy Sneed read the eulogy.
Well, let's hope you survive, Mr. Merriweather, so you and Mrs. Merriweather can have dinner with us tomorrow night.
Yes. Most attractive offer I've had all week. What time?
Oh, 7:30-ish, or 7:45-ish, or even 7:15. Name your own ish. By the way, are you dieting, either of you? It seems nowadays that everybody is.
And we wouldn't want to be lacking in culinary tact. After all, with territorial statehood in question, it would never do to serve baked Alaska to a southern senator.
No, nor ask him to dance a hula afterwards.
No. Well, I'm not dieting, but did you ever know my wife when she wasn't? Or claim she wasn't?
Well, I'm glad we found out. What can she eat?
Oh, well, don't worry about it. There are three things a woman will make any excuse to get out of. A rainstorm, a tight girdle, and a diet. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Charles. I do like Mr. Merriweather. He's so comfortable. I can't imagine him getting really perturbed about anything.
Well, that's because you've never seen him take 7 practice swings, test the wind with a wet finger, wait for a clear fairway, tell his caddy to keep an eye on the ball, and then flub his first tee shot.
Well, that's different. That's a reason. How does he react?
It was rather frightening.
Oh.
Mm. He just smiled. A thin-lipped smile, like Boris Karloff measuring out arsenic. He throws his driver into the nearest shrubbery, runs over to a tree, and starts banging his head against the trunk. Then he sobs once or twice, comes back, borrows a brassy, shuts his eyes, and slams a screaming drive about 300 yards.
It's an emotional game, isn't it? I suppose all golfers would go insane if they didn't have to take such a long walk between the tee and the green.
Well, I'll be glad when the weather opens up enough so we can play again.
You don't mind playing golf with your own wife? Oh. You are an exceptional man.
With you, my darling, golf is simply a matter of getting my feet on the green grass, my head into the wind, and a long stroll with someone pleasant to talk to and be with. I love the sun, the air, the rolling hills, the gleam of water, and you beside me singing in the wilderness. Ah, wilderness were paradise enow. Do you suppose Omar was a golfer?
Of course he was. A book of rules consulted neath the bough, a tangled rough, a stymied ball.
And thou beside me searching in the undergrowth. Ah, let us tell the Greens Committee now.
But why do you keep looking at your watch? You can't play golf for another month at least.
Yeah, I know, darling, but I'm expecting Professor Harmon, and here he is.
Well, that's one thing about being the president, Toddy. People have to keep their appointments on time.
Yes, it's one of the compensations of my job. As my father used to say, an appointment unkept is a promise broken. And I have all... Oh, good afternoon, Professor.
Afternoon, Dr. Hall. Mrs. Hall.
Hello, Professor Harmon. You're looking very well.
I am? Well, that shows you how deceitful I must be. Because I don't feel well at all.
Oh.
Anything specific, Professor? Or just things in general?
Oh, I don't know, frankly. But I'm fed up with everything. I haven't got any particular aches or pains, but I just feel like throwing everything aside and running away.
Well, you can buy a ticket to anywhere in the world, but you always pay excess for your mental luggage. But why not sit down and let's see what can be done about your resignation?
The way I feel about it, there's only one thing to do, and that's to resign.
Why don't you take that chair, Professor Hartman?
Yeah, that's our psychological seat, Professor. It's deep enough so the visitor can't get up suddenly and run out, and low enough so that its occupant must look up slightly to the president.
Yes. And it's paid for, which gives the president and his wife a pleasant feeling of security.
But I thought all psychologists made the patient face the light while they kept their own faces in the shadow.
Ah, that's a strategy employed only by amateur psychologists. It is not the play of emotions on the visitor's face which guide my interviews. It's the expression which I permit him to see on my face. So, thus forewarned, tell me your troubles.
My husband intensely dislikes the idea of losing your services, Professor.
Oh, yes.
Thank you. But I can't stay at the college. I think it would kill me.
Is it that bad? It
probably sounds a little dramatic to you, but I'm not dramatizing myself. I'm headed for a crack-up. I don't want to end up in the hospital. The pressure is too great. My classes. Working on 2 books for fall publication. Meetings for this and that and committees.
Oh, it shouldn't be difficult to get you off some of the committees. And possibly relieve the pressure in other directions also.
Mr. Merriweather's definition of a committee would make anyone want to get off them. He says, a committee is a group of the unfit appointed by the unwilling to undertake the unnecessary.
Oh, it isn't just the committees or any one thing. It's everything. The everlasting, unremitting pressure. I can't take it. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I'm jittery and jumpy. I just got to get away and get hold of myself.
Have you considered spending a few days in the clinic for a physical checkup?
Oh, I've done all that. The doctors find nothing. But I know there's something.
Excuse me, will you? Dr. Hall's residence. Yes, operator, please do. It's from Bloomington, Indiana. Indiana, you.
And who's who at old IU?
It's probably Professor Marcelli of the music department. I'm sorry, Professor Harmon. It'll be Hello? Hello? Rico? Ah, come sta, amico mio? Bene, bene. Of course I'm ready. Been ready for weeks. All right, here it is. Rook to the knight's fourth and mate in 3 moves. Ha ha. Oh, you don't think so? Well, take your time, old man. Chess has been played for centuries. Why should we hurry it? How's the concerto coming along? Oh, that's too bad. Well, it's your move now, Rico. Good luck. Arrivederci.
I take it the concerto isn't doing too well.
Professor Marcelli's concerto is a sometimes thing. He alternates between being an accomplished composer and a frantic chess player. This is one of his frantic periods.
Oh.
But I'm sorry we were interrupted, Professor Harmon. Go on, please.
Well, there isn't any more. I simply want to resign. I know I have a contract, but I hope you'll give me permission to cancel it.
Well, if you assure us that you can work out no alternative, I will see that your contract is canceled.
May we ask your plans if you do resign, Professor?
I haven't made any, Mrs. Hall. I'll go away somewhere and take a long rest. I'm just giving up.
See, who's at the door, Victoria? Do you mind?
Yes, certainly. Hi, Miss Hall. Hello, Sheila.
Ah, Sheila. Come in.
That's right now, here. Sit right here. There, sit. Let me take your crutches.
Thank you, Miss Powell. I just wanted to tell you about Terry. The doctor says he's fine.
Oh, that's splendid, Sheila.
We're delighted to hear it.
I'm going to go see him Saturday. Isn't that wonderful?
Indeed it is.
And thank you for coming over to tell us, dear.
But you two haven't met. Professor Harmon, this is our next-door neighbor, Sheila Quincannon, a young lady whom I admire immensely.
How do you do?
Well, how do you do, Sheila? Is Professor Quincannon your father?
Yes, he is. Do you know him?
Oh, yes, I do. He's a wonderful man.
I know it. Do you know Terry?
Terry?
Yes, Terence Quincannon, Sheila's brother.
He's in the hospital. They took out his appendix. I'm going to go see him Saturday on account of they're going to adjust my braces anyway.
Is that much of a job, Sheila?
Oh, no. It just takes a little while. My father says that not so long ago, when a little girl needed braces, there were many good ones. Now they make dandy ones. I guess I'm just lucky.
Lucky?
Sheila wants to be a doctor when she grows up. Don't you, Sheila?
Sure. Or maybe a nurse. But maybe a doctor would be best. Because if my legs don't get better, I can sit at a desk and help people. Just as have to hurry around and lift things.
Well, I'm sure you'd make a very good doctor.
Well, I guess I'd better go now. It's a wonderful day out. I'm going to sit on the porch and watch the kids play. Can I please have my crutches, Miss Hall?
There you are. I'll walk to the door with you.
Don't bother, Miss Hall. I like to do it all by myself. Remember, I'm the bounciest one in the block. Bye, Dr. Hall. Bye, Professor.
Goodbye. Now then, Professor Harmon, back to your problem. You were saying?
Thank you.
Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman, has been presented by Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. The taste of Schlitz, the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. Why don't you, too, enjoy the most popular beer in history? Next time, every time, ask for Schlitz beer. Now, here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Thank you, Ken. Ladies and gentlemen, little Sheila Quincannon is your neighbor, too. In every neighborhood, in every community, there are children who need your help. The sale of Easter Seals by the Society for Crippled Children and Adults is dedicated to this purpose.
Please support this wonderful work with your purchase of Easter Seals, or send a donation direct to Crippled Children, care of your local post office. Send as much as you can, but even a small donation will seem large to some youngster who has nowhere else to look for help and comfort.
It's wonderful when all we tall ones can bend and lend our strength to small ones. Good night, everybody.
Good night from all of us.
And from our sponsor, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and its thousands of friendly dealers throughout the nation.
Good night.
We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Mr. Merriweather is played by Gail Gordon. Sheila was Mary McGovern, and Professor Harmon was John Brown. Tonight's script was written by Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Milton Merlin, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who invites you to enjoy on television the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars with Helen Hayes, Margaret Sullivan, Walter Hampton, and more of the brightest names of Hollywood and Broadway. See your newspaper for Time and Channel. Ken Carpenter speaking.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget though we be far away.
Now, just for laughs, join in the fun with the Great Gildersleeve on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is air. A-I-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again with $2,000 for one of our couples tonight. Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Well, a bachelor and a spinster, Groucho, selected by our studio audience just before we went on the air.
Land sakes.
Their names are Ida Easley and Jack Wayne, and here they come now. Come on in here, folks, and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Ida Easley, eh?
Ida Easley.
Oh, that's an Easley name to remember. You're the spinster, eh?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Let me see you spin. Where are you from, Ida?
I'm from Taylorville, Illinois.
Where?
Taylorville, Illinois.
Taylorville? Did you have a job, Ida?
I'm a matron at the Douglas Aircraft Company in Slovenia.
Oh, thank you. Ida, of course you realize that half of that swag belongs to Mr. Wayne over here.
Yeah, that's what worries me. I think he's more worried than I am, for I have a hold of it.
Well, eventually he may be holding you and the $50, eh?
Well,
Jack,
time will tell.
Well, what do you do, Jack?
Oh, I run a streetcar.
Where are you from, Jack?
Born in the heart of Boston.
Why did you leave the bean town?
Oh, my feet got itchy, now I want to roam.
You went to Rome, and how'd you like it there?
Where do you run your trolley?
On the track.
Caught me napping, eh? I suppose that's one of the little jokes you streetcar men use to amuse each other back in the car barn, is that it?
That's an old joke.
It is, eh? Well, it may interest you to know that while you're knocking each other out back in the car barn, the city's pulling up the tracks to make way for a bus line. Jack, how come you're a bachelor? Is it because in your job you see too much of women?
Oh, I see plenty of them.
You do, huh? You could see a lot more of them if you'd step off your streetcar and watch them climb on. I always get on last. They think it's politeness, but it isn't really. Jack, if you found the right woman, would you be interested in matrimony?
Oh, I guess I would.
What would you consider the right woman?
Or a housekeeper, a good housekeeper, a good cook. And they'll go to a ball game with me once in a while.
You don't need one girl. What you need is the YWCA, Jack. How old are you, Ida, if that isn't too
I think I'm about his age.
Frankly, you don't care how old he is, do you?
Thought of such a thing.
You're his age anyway, no matter how old he is.
No matter how old.
Are you a good cook, Ida?
Well, I think I'm good.
Do you like baseball?
Oh, very much.
Do you follow it quite closely?
Yes, I keep up the game.
See. Well, I'm an average fan, too. What do you think of Sugar Ray Robinson's chances this year? You think he's going to break Babe Ruth's record?
Oh, I think he stands a very good chance.
Yes, but on the other hand, don't forget, he still has to beat Gussie Moran.
I know, I understand.
Well, you can't blame a girl for trying, I always say. As a matter of fact, I never said that before in my life. I don't know why I lie this way, eh? Would you get married tonight if the right man came along and knocked you off your feet?
Oh, I think I would.
You would. Well, look out for Ding Dong Daddy, are you? He can knock you off your feet and charge you 11 cents car fare at the same time. Well, you certainly make a nice couple. Just remember, none but the brave deserve the fare, Jack. Always remember that, eh? And you're just the one to collect it. Now, we're going to play You Bet Your Life for $2,000. But I want you to pay close attention to Fenneman over there.
Friends, when you select a dealer to service your car, you owe it to yourself to visit a member of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealer Organization. This nationwide group, there are over 3,000 of them from coast to coast, believes in the old-fashioned idea of courtesy and the modern idea of finest equipment, best-trained men. As for the cars they handle, well, there just aren't any better than the big and brilliant DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. DeSoto is the car with smooth, sweeping lines that attract so much attention. You'll enjoy the experience of greater safety with DeSoto's powerful brakes that bring you to a smooth stop. No car in America has bigger brakes. DeSoto starts so quickly and powerfully and lets you drive without shifting. So drive a DeSoto before you decide on any car. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Look for those two great names linked together. DeSoto, Plymouth.
All right, now let's see if you two will get a chance at the $2,000. Fenneman, explain the rules.
All right. Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $2,000 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. You see, our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected birds, animals, and people as your category. All right, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
$10.
$10. What animal do you associate with Jonah?
The whale.
The whale is right. Now talk right up.
And you folks are on your way. You have $30.
All right, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
$20.
$20? What animal do you associate with the Pied Piper? Take a look at Jack.
They followed her up the street.
The Piper.
Well, I'm sorry. It's rats. You were on the right track. How much have they got now?
They now have $10, Groucho.
That's a shame. You're down to $10.
That's a shame. We're down to $10.
Here's your third question. How much of the 10 will you try?
$5.
$5. Is that all right, Jack?
Yes, sir.
What animal do you associate with Daniel in the Bible?
Lion.
Lion.
The lion is right.
Well, it's funny again. Now I have $15.
All right, you got $15, and here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 15 will you risk?
Well, let's take 10.
$10.
$10. What animal do you associate with Lady Godiva?
Oh, the horse.
That's right, a horse is correct.
And you wind up with a grand total of $25.
Don't forget, you won how much?
$25.
$25, and you won $100. That's $125. Thanks, and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers.
Well, Groucho, our next couple has been in a waiting room offstage, so, of course, they don't know the secret word is air.
True, true.
Okay, fellas, you can bring them in now. We invited some lady barbers to the program tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Maybelle Taylor. Her partner is a married man, Mr. Thomas DeSilver. And here they are, folks. I'd like you to meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, and if you say the secret word, you'll split $100 between you. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Maybelle Taylor, is that right?
That's right.
And Thomas DeSilva. You're a lady barber, Maybelle?
That's right.
Where are you from, Mabel?
Montana.
Montana, whereabouts?
Culbertson, Montana.
And Thomas DeSilva, you're a married man, huh?
That's right.
Is that your only claim to distinction, Thomas?
Yes.
What sort of work do you do, Tommy?
Retired police captain.
Oh, I'm glad I found that out. How long have you been married?
16 years.
You remember how you met your wife, huh?
Yes, but it's a long story.
Well, keep it down to 1,500 words, will you? I have to be in Pittsburgh a week from next Wednesday. Okay, go ahead. How'd you meet your wife?
We went down to Wildwood, New Jersey. Got a couple of bathing suits and took her down to Wildwood, New Jersey. Put a bathing suit on and then gave her the engagement ring.
You're a pretty shrewd cookie, aren't you?
So, after seeing her in the bathing suit, then I started singing proposal to her.
You sang a proposal?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how did you sing the proposal to her?
Let me call your sweetheart and gave her the engagement ring.
Would you mind singing a few words?
Sing it. Oh.
Well, go ahead.
Let me call you sweetheart. I'm in love with you. Let me hear you whisper that you love me
too.
I'm in love with you.
And she consented to marry you after that?
Well,
that's the first time
years.
I ever sang a chorus in five keys. Now, Mabel, are you married?
No, I'm not.
You're not married, huh? Would you get married to a man who sang like that to you?
Well, certainly.
I never met a lady barber before. Aren't they pretty rare?
Well, I'd say there's possibly 15 of us in the city of Los Angeles.
No, that's medium rare. Now, what made you decide? What made you decide to become a barber or a tonsorial artist? Is that?
I wanted to make money enough to see myself through nurse's training.
And?
I'm still barbering.
What's the difference between a lady barber and a man barber?
There are several.
There are several differences?
There are several differences.
Well, I'm relieved to hear that, huh? You better clarify it, Mabel. There's a hermit in Idaho who may have forgotten.
Well, we have a lighter touch, and we don't talk an ear off of you.
What do? Just shave it off, huh? I suppose you have a scrapbook where you keep all your clippings, Mabel?
Yeah? Yes.
Do any of your customers flirt with you, Mabel? The male customers?
Well, they're not really serious with me.
Now, how do you handle these Romeos?
Oh, I just kid them along. They like it.
Well, how do you kid them? Do you tell them jokes?
Yes, occasionally.
Well, tell us a joke. Go ahead. Pretend I'm sitting in your chair and you want me to forget how much all this is going to cost me. Now you go ahead and tell me a joke.
Do you know the best way to save your hair?
Yes, put it in a cigar box. That's an old joke.
Do you know a way
tell to... Tell me another joke, huh?
Do you know a way to avoid falling hair?
Yes, just step nimbly to one side, huh? That's even older than the other joke, huh? You know any more jokes, Mabel?
No, I believe not.
Go on, admit it. I'm too fast for you, Mabel.
Well,
grass,
your hair is getting a little bit thin.
Yeah, well, grass doesn't grow on a busy street, Mabel.
Well, I was going to say that grass doesn't grow on a cement highway either.
Mabel, I know just how your customers feel. My head is bloody but unbowed. Well, all right, now we're going to play You Bet Your Life, eh? Now, we'll see how you two make out in the battle for the $2,000. You got to work together as a team and run your $20 into more than our other couples. I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The bachelor and the spinster won $25.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected nicknames of famous cities as your category. Here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try? Tommy, wake up. $10. You're going to ignore Mabel, huh? What city is known as the city of brotherly love?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. That's where you...
They're on their way, Groucho. They have $30.
$30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
No,
talk right up.
Make it 20.
All right. What city is known as the biggest little city in the world?
Reno, Nevada.
Reno, Nevada is right.
All your folks are refunding now. It has
$50. Here's the third question. Now, how much will you bet?
50.
50. What city is known as the Mile High City?
Denver, Colorado.
Denver, Colorado.
And they've climbed the $100.
You've climbed as high as Denver, Colorado. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 100 will you try?
Make it all. The last question?
Yes, here's the last question.
Let it go.
You're going to shoot the works, huh? What city is known as the Smoky City?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh is right. Good luck to the Soda Plymouth dealers.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to soon know who gets the chance at the big question, worth $2,000 tonight. Because at this point, the people who were just up here, the lady barber and the married man, are leading with $200, and the secret word is still air.
Uh-huh.
Okay, fellas, you can bring in our next contestants. We invited to the show tonight some professional golfers and some singing teachers. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Lucia Liverette and Mr. Paul Runyon. And here they come. Folks, I'd like you to meet Roger Martin.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life, folks. And if you say the DeSoto Plymouth secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Lucia Liverette, huh? You're a singing teacher. Sounds like a pretty good record, Lucia. Where are you from, Sing Sing?
I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, huh?
Yes,
you sing the St. Louis blues?
Well, no, not quite.
Paul Runyon, it's nice to see you again. I'm sure everyone is familiar with your name. What did you say your name was?
Paul Runyon.
Paul Runyon, huh? See there, even you're familiar with it, huh? Well, let's see, you won the Davis Cup, the Whiteman Cup, and the men's singles at Forest Hills, didn't you?
You may have a good memory, but those are tennis terms.
Oh, wrong racket. What are some of your titles there? What are some of your titles, Paul?
I was fortunate enough to win the National Professional Golfers Championship
PGA.
In 1934 and 1938.
That's pretty good for a little fellow like that, huh? All famous golfers have nicknames, Paul. What's yours?
Little Poison.
Little Poison, huh? They call me Big Schlemiel, huh? Why do they call you Little Poison, Paul?
Well, perhaps it's because I have been the thorn in the side of some heavier adversaries.
Very well put, Paul. And Lucia, you what kind of singing do you teach?
Opera and classical and semi-classic.
You mean they have to study to scream like that? Huh? Tell me, Rigoletto, can you teach anyone to sing?
I will say yes, because I've never found anyone yet who could not learn if he had the correct technical work.
You should have been out here about 10 minutes ago. You'd be licking your wounds now, Lucia. All right, how would you teach me, Lucia? Boom, 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 boom. That's Lucia.
Yes, it is. Yes. Well, to begin with, correct breathing.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yes,
what?
Inhaling.
Inhaling?
Deeply. relaxation so the air will keep coming in.
There you are. You pick that out, Lucia, and be sure Paul gets 50 of it, huh? Well, Cadenza, are all singers alike, or is there a difference between them?
Oh, certainly.
What kind of voices do singers have?
Well, of course, to begin with, our first classification is there are women's voices and men's voices.
Well, I didn't know that. I must tell this to this Hyman. Suppose I wanted to get up a lady quartet. Could I find one who sings bass?
No. The contralto is as low as a lady goes.
You haven't been out with... Lucia, obviously, we haven't been out with the same kind of lady. Now, Paul, let's talk about golf. How long do you have to be a pro before you can become an amateur? Oh, no, my mistake. That's tennis. I was thinking of... What is your favorite club?
The Annandale Golf Club of Pasadena.
What's your best score for 18 holes?
On a regulation 18-hole championship course, 61 at the Forest Hills Field Club in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
How about the... What is the average golfer go around in?
I think 95 to 100.
How about the girls? Don't some of the girls do better than that?
Oh, a good many of the girls go around in a great deal less.
What time does your club open up in the morning? I remember the first time I played golf, I went around in 75. I didn't play at all in 76. I was busy at Valley Forge. How can I improve my score? I shoot around 94. That's what cheating.
I think I'd advise you to take a few lessons from a competent instructor. Do a little practicing and a little playing.
I've taken lessons. It's hopeless.
Well,
how could I learn to win without playing well?
You might resort to a little pencil pushing, or you might have a hole in your pocket, or you might have a handy toe in the rough, or you might use a hand mashie more frequently.
How is it you know so much about those things? Tell me about that pencil pushing again, huh?
First of all, you have to forget to count over five.
On any hole?
Any hole.
What about the 540 at Hillcrest?
Well, I think you could still forget to count over five when
I do, but you know where I am? I'm in the first sand trap leading the tee. I met 11 Arabs the last time I played. You must have had a number of exciting moments as a professional golfer. Can you tell us about one of them, Paul?
Well, as a tournament player, I've had many exciting experiences. Perhaps the most exciting is during the playing of the international four-ball matches in Miami, Florida. I was partnered by Horton Smith in this best ball event, and on arriving at the fourth tee, I dropped a high five-iron shot right on the top of a head of a gentleman sitting on a camp stool behind the green. He had just reached up to take his hat off to polish his head with his handkerchief when the ball hit on the top of his head, and he dropped off of the seat like he'd been shot with a Winchester rifle. But on the next year, Horton and I incidentally won the first International Four-Ball Championship, and we were paired again as partners. The next year, arriving at the ninth green with 2,000 or 3,000 people down the left side of the fairway, Smith hit a booming hook down the left side. Down goes a man. Who is it? Our friend of the camp. And the publicity on the International Four-Ball matches the next year says that Dr. Johnson is in Miami to watch his perennial favorites, Runyon and Smith, in the International Four-Ball matches, but he'll gallery in an armored suit.
Well, it must be very handy to have a walking bullseye on the golf course. Huh? Now, Lucia, let's get back to singing again. Do you have any particular exercises you give your singing pupils?
Well, yes, there are several kinds of exercises, all to teach them freedom of breathing, and as I said, the free flow of air up into the resonance chambers, and then to make them relax and be happy about what they're doing, we give them a laughing exercise. They start in, they enjoy it, they laugh all the way from middle sea up to high sea.
I once laughed from Glendale to Burbank. But... what about demonstrating this exercise, Lucia? Huh?
We might take something a little lower, maybe.
Well, take something a little lower. Me,
sea.
For example. Huh? You can't get any lower than that. Let's go, huh?
I see.
Tail loose, Lucia.
All right. The deep breath in the diaphragm. Then drop the jaw open for the air to go up, and then...
Well, the three of us could be very happy, Paul. We could all sing together, Mashies in the Cold, Cold Ground. Well, now you're going to play your bet your life. You beat the other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $2,000 question. That's the DeSoto Plymouth question. Now, I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenham is offstage to remind our listeners.
The Lady Barber and the Married Man are ahead with $200.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected women athletes as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10?
$10. In what sport is Gussie Moran famous?
Tennis.
Tennis is right, huh? $30. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of your $30 will you bet on your second question?
$20.
$20. In what sport is Florence Chadwick famous? It's a tough one. Take a
tennis?
Stand. No, I'm sorry. It's swimming. She broke Gertrude Edley's record for the Channel.
They now have $10.
You now have $10, he said in a low, funereal voice, huh? Here's your third question. How much of the 10 you going to go for?
Nine.
Well, you're going to hang on the edge, huh, Paul? In what sport is Patty Berg famous?
Golf.
Golf is right, huh?
Well, on the way again, they now have $19.
All right, you got, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 19?
The works.
You're going to shoot the works, all right. In what sport is Barbara Ann Scott famous?
Ice skating.
Ice skating is correct.
And they wind up with a grand total of $38. And that means the Lady Barber and the Married Man with $200 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question.
The best trained men, the best materials, and the best equipment. Those are the important things every DeSoto Plymouth dealer offers you car owners. And that's why you should take your car for service to a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. You see, DeSoto Plymouth dealers have men trained in the latest factory methods. This means that the mechanics who work on your car are experts. And in every DeSoto Plymouth dealer's shop, you'll find special tools and costly equipment. In addition, right on hand, they have a large supply of factory-engineered and inspected Mopar parts. Yes, you'll like the way business is done at a DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Find this out for yourself and do it real soon. The very next time your car needs service, drive in where you see the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
And here's the Lady Barber and the Married Man, all set for the DeSoto Plymouth $2,000 question. Good luck to you.
Here we go. For $2,000, I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you. So think carefully, and please no help from the audience. Here it is. The longest battle of our Civil War was the Seven Days Battle. What city was the objective of this great struggle?
Richmond
is right. That's right. You win $2,000. You had the right answer, so you win $2,000. What are you going to do with all that money?
Help her brother-in-law.
You're going to help your brother-in-law? Why?
Ill.
Oh, he's ill. Well, that's a fine way to spend it. And you, Mabel?
Give some to the cancer fund.
Some to the cancer fund. Well, those are worthy objectives, huh? Let's see, you won $2,000 plus $100 in the... How much did they win in the quiz?
$200 in the quiz.
$200 in the quiz and $2,000 cash and the secret word?
I don't think this couple said
didn't get the secret word.
Well, you won $2,200, $2,200. Congratulations and thanks to both of you from the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks. Just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. Walkers wise, use their eyes. You Bet Your Life is transcribed from Hollywood, produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.